Blood is everything you need. Only in blood do we find the truth. And I will find it.
Welcome to the Anglophiles, a podcast where two Americans break down British movies and TV. I'm Sheldon.
I'm Danny.
And I'm cold.
It's cold in Los Angeles.
Yeah, surprisingly. And when we say that, of course, we mean it's like in the 50s, and though we're getting a high of 50 degrees.
But we're not used to that.
It's
quite cold. Yeah, so this is a new episode. How have you been this week?
I've been good. My boss just got back to work, so like he's been on a vacation to Taiwan for a while. And so it's been nice where he brought back a lot of treats. They're delicious. Love eating these little pastries with red bean paste and yolk.
Yum.
But it has been like, oh right, we have a lot of work to do. I think you really lag in the month of December. You just don't do anything at work. And the second
true.
Like it takes a bit to kickstart again.
Yeah.
What about you?
Same old stuff, really. I've been working hard on my, I have an Instagram account where I post 80s fashion.
And what's the handle?
It's cherryicecream_smile.
Good name.
And, I've been collecting 80s fashion for a couple years now, and recently I've been posting it on, posting outfits on Instagram. That's been really fun. So I've really been putting some work into it in the last week. It's been really fun. What else has been going on?
What's that?
A little thing that the British tabloids are calling Megxit.
That's pretty good, actually.
I
thought
so
you were gonna
mean.
Say it was gonna be like Windsorgate.
Windsorgate.
And I hate so much any newspaper that just adds gate to the end of something, because it's like Watergate was the hotel. It wasn't like water was the problem.
It wasn't like there was a Watergate that was the scandal.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's a lot of British news. We normally both do a British news story, but
there's one story right
there's
now.
There's something happening in Britain right now that's very big, so I kind of thought we could discuss it.
Yeah, we'd be remiss if we didn't talk
And this
about it.
Is the fact that Meghan Markle and Prince Harry, a.k.a. Harry Windsor, have announced that they are taking a step back from their royal roles.
Yep.
Which also, I guess, entails them becoming financially independent,
mm-hmm.
And then kind of splitting their time in between the UK and the US. And, yeah, so there's a lot of stuff happening right now. I have questions. A lot of people have questions. Things like, are they losing just their status, or are they also losing their titles? Are they keeping their titles?
No,
what's
they're
going
not.
On?
They're not losing any of their titles. They're not losing their status. It's basically just like, yeah, they're not. They don't have duties anymore.
Well, there is also something that has come up that is a little bit interesting, and that is they're so high profile that they need to have a security detail, and if they're living in the UK and they're kind of not even like. You know, like, doing their thing, like, do the British taxpayers need to be paying for them to have security? It's just really interesting.
Complicated
matter.
They're still members of the royal family.
It's true.
Like, in the United States, former presidents still have Secret Service.
It's true.
Like, I think once you're part of the family, you deserve protection for the family. That's, like, the whole point of the royal family. I think, and, I mean, I would be curious, though, because I know they're not the first couple, like, in the line that has done something like this in recent history. Like, mm-hmm. Prince Edward and his wife did the same thing where they said, we want to work in the private sector. We don't want to be, like, in the public eye like this. And I think theirs was a little different. I don't think either of them had a ton of success, and they were kind of caught making negative comments about the crown. But it doesn't seem like that's Harry and Meghan. It seems like they still very much respect the family, love, like...
Yeah, and the Queen has made a statement, too, that makes it sound like, you know, we're all talking about it, we're solving the problems that are coming up. So it sounds like everyone's okay with it, it's just that it sounds like the media is just really having a time.
Well, it's a free headline, it's free, like, basically the media is one of the reasons why people are saying this is happening.
Yeah.
Is that Meghan Markle wasn't expecting how ruthless British tabloids are.
Yeah. I saw a whole article that was comparing headlines about Kate Middleton revolving certain events she did and certain things she was doing, and the same news outlets posting the same coverage of Meghan at these events. And she was just, it sounds like she's been treated very poorly by the British media.
Are you surprised?
I mean, I don't know anything about the British media, really, so I am surprised.
Well, I know, I mean, just one, tabloids are tabloids and they're terrible.
Yeah.
But two, like, Meghan, I don't think, is the type of person that a lot of people expected him to marry.
Interesting.
And I think a lot of people probably think she's too low class for him.
Well.
And that's why they went after her.
Yeah. That's really
compared
sad.
To other people who have been married who are of class.
Yeah. There's also maybe a race thing involved.
Definitely could be a possibility.
Someone also pointed out that part of why they're stepping back is the media. Meghan's been treated kind of roughly by the media, but also apparently Harry also has always blamed the paparazzi on his mother's death.
Yeah, so I'm sure that only made it worse. Like, just them being around constantly,
his whole life.
Couldn't handle that.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's really, really interesting. There's a lot of opinions going around. I personally, just as an outsider, I barely know the situation. I think it's probably good for them to do this.
Yeah, I mean, and honestly, he's not gonna ever take the throne. He's so far down the line and keeps moving further down the line.
Yeah.
Like, as the Cambridge family is getting bigger and bigger, he's just moving further and further away. I don't think... Yeah. I think it's fine.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, like, Archie has no title anyway. Their kid, they chose not to give him a title, and so now, like, he's not a part of it. I wouldn't doubt that this was their plan all along, that they never really wanted the spotlight in the same way.
Yeah.
But it sounds like they're still going to keep their titles. They're not renouncing their titles. They're not, like, being kicked out of the family or anything.
Yeah. Well, that's really fascinating. If any of our listeners have an opinion or information about what's happening and you want to share it with us, feel free to email us, feel free to chat on our Facebook, anything like that. We love hearing from our listeners, both UK and US.
Yeah, and we would love to know we'd love to know more of an explanation of what's happening. I mean, granted, like, we know everything through some news, but it's across the world. Like, we don't know if what we're reading is reported accurately or actually what it means. Like, I know because we have a president, we don't have a queen, we don't have a royal family, we don't have that culture. And so if you want to explain kind of the feelings you get behind it, we would love that too.
Cool. So we have a listener mail this week. Would you like me to read it?
I would. It's been a couple weeks. I don't think we've had a listener mail for a little bit.
It's true. We actually have this email and then another one that we'll have to read on our next episode. This one is from Matthew Lagden. He's written in before.
Yeah.
And he is writing in about our last episode where we covered Dunkirk, the movie. So
good.
It is a great movie. So this is from Matthew. He says, "Hiya. I loved your Dunkirk podcast. I was at university with Christopher Nolan. We were in film club together, and I was on the same course as his wife, Emma. This isn't very interesting, but he's pretty much the only famous person I've ever known, and all my friends are bored of hearing about it."
Tell us all the stories.
"The only possible criticism is that he doesn't capture the scale and chaos of the beaches. They look exceptionally clean, and the numbers look really sparse, given that there were
330,000.
I'm really bad with numbers. Men on the beach.
Yeah.
"You are right that it is absolutely central to our national identity. The whole summer of 1940, in fact, from the evacuation at Dunkirk through to the Never Surrender speech, which lots of British people, including me, know by heart. We learned it at school. And then the Battle of Britain. It is our go-to reference point for any period of hardship or difficulty." Wow.
Yeah.
"Compare the scene set at Dunkirk from the film Atonement," which you should totally cover. It's a masterpiece. And then he has attached a link to a clip from the movie Atonement, which you and I watched before we sat down to record. And yeah, it looks very different. It's definitely more, there's more people.
It's a lot grittier, dirty.
Very chaotic. There's a lot of people running around. There's people lounging. There's people rushing. There's
like makeshift
tents. People shooting horses.
Yeah.
There are people wrecking cars so that the Germans don't get them.
I wonder if Atonement probably wasn't shot on Dunkirk Beach, and if they had very strict filming regulations that they're like,
at actual Dunkirk,
you can't mess up this actual beach, Chris Nolan.
Yeah.
And I bet he had to, like, kind of play along and couldn't maybe make it as dirty and as realistic as he wanted. Because, yeah, once you show, like, once we watch that Atonement clip, it is clear. You're right. Like, it definitely feels more intense and suffocating.
Yeah. Anyway, he says, if the link doesn't work, search Dunkirk Atonement on YouTube, which I did, or see the attached pictures, and he's attached pictures that are actual photographs from Dunkirk, which I know you've probably seen, I've seen a couple of them, but, yeah, it's just the amount of people on the beach, the amount of soldiers on the beach is insane.
It looks like a forest, like it looks like trees, since this is shot from far away, and it's,
the only color. Thing that I can say in Chris Nolan's defense here is that it sounds like, you know, he doesn't like to use CG if he doesn't have to. He likes to be practical, and so it may have just been like they couldn't get that many people out there. You know, that's a lot of money.
Yeah, it's very expensive to get that many people. So to pay extras.
Anyway, Matthew continues. He says, on another note, you should do The Inbetweeners, which is ridiculously British and enormously popular.
I love The Inbetweeners, and I keep trying to get Danny to watch it.
I watched an episode. I didn't get it. I'm not a teenage boy. I will watch it, though, because everyone says it's funny, so I will watch it.
It's so awkward and great.
He says, four seasons and two films. One of which is the most successful, one of the most successful British films ever.
That's what I've heard.
And then he says, in terms of cheese and pickle sandwiches, the correct order from top to bottom is...
Did we do it way wrong?
We did an okay job, but this is Matthew Langdon's. Official. This is the order. Bread.
Boom.
The thicker the better. With butter. Pickle. Cheese. Mayonnaise. Bread above.
Oh.
Yeah. So, like, one side has butter on it, one side has mayonnaise on it, and then there's pickle and cheese in between. So, yeah. Okay. That sounds good.
Yeah.
I would try it.
We need to add the mayo.
Because I don't think we had butter or mayo on ours. I think it was just cheese and pickle.
Yeah. And I was saying it needed something a little extra.
It needs something to keep the cheese on.
But you loved it on its own. You've made another one of those sandwiches. I've seen it.
I'm kind of obsessed with the cheese and pickle sandwich. Anyway, Matthew says, keep up the good work, Matthew.
Thanks, Matthew.
Great email. I love that you hit on what we talked about during that episode as far as the movie, but you talked about suggestions. You talked about our snack. This is a great email.
Yeah, and we do need to watch Atonement. Neither of us have seen it yet, surprisingly.
But we love James McAvoy.
Yeah, big fan of James McAvoy.
He's great. We like Keira Knightley. We like Saoirse. So, yeah, we'll watch it.
Yeah, definitely. We'll add it to the list. Maybe we'll give it a little bit so we step away from that time period.
True.
Don't do a couple back-to-back.
Do you want to introduce our topic?
I would love to. So, today's episode, we touched on very briefly in the last one when we mentioned the billboard advertising for this in the BBC.
Yes.
We are watching Netflix miniseries Dracula.
Yes, it's the BBC three-part miniseries called Dracula. It is now on the US on Netflix. Mm-hmm. So I grabbed the synopsis or the description from IMDb. It says, in 1897, Transylvania, the blood-drinking count draws his plans against Victorian London.
And I guess that's a summary of it, but not at all.
Such a vague description of this show. But at the same time, I don't know how you would...
I don't know how you describe this show. Because, like...
Are you kidding me?
Okay, nope. You get to go in here.
Oh, he's just gonna meow.
It's fine.
It's gonna be loud.
But we're gonna keep him in there until it happens. Alright, come on. Let's do it for a little bit.
Yeah, so we knew we were interested in Dracula. We had seen the billboard. We had seen some trailers.
And, I mean, it is a book both of us have read when we were younger and have seen other Dracula movies. Like,
Very familiar.
The classic Bela Lugosi. Mm-hmm. I think we do love the Gary Oldman.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Incredible movie.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so I think, in general, it's a tale that's been told a lot in a lot of different ways. Mm-hmm. And so it was exciting to see... What are they going to do differently? What are they going to bring to the table? Is Dracula going to be the same as ones that we've seen before?
Yeah.
And I think it answered all those questions in a weird way.
Yeah, this was a really, really strange show. Overall, I do like it. But it is really strange. I'm not really sure what it was meant to do, you know? Because it's not a full-on overhaul of the Dracula story.
You're right. Like, there are some things that are slightly different than the books, but then there are some things that lean very heavily on the story that we need to know.
Yeah.
And I think it's very referential to the movies and the things that have come before it.
Yes. So I thought we could talk about the cast.
Yeah, let's do it.
First of all, what did you think of the guy who played Dracula?
He wasn't my favorite, honestly.
I don't know how to pronounce his name. It looks like he's Danish, but it looks like his name may be Claes Bang.
Yeah.
He's a Danish actor. Yeah, I had really mixed feelings about him as Dracula, because there were scenes where I was like, wow, this guy's really good looking. And then there were scenes where I was like, is he good looking enough to play Dracula? I don't know.
Is that a qualifier that Dracula needs to be hot?
I think hot, no, but seductive, yes.
See, he felt Dracula seductive to me.
Dracula needs to be alluring. And I think this guy was pretty good at it.
Yeah.
But it was scene to scene. Some scenes were great and some were just kind of...
I think he also wasn't given a lot of great lines.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like he... I feel like he was physically imposing, and he did a lot of great jobs where I was scared of him. It was bloody and gory a lot of the time because of this guy.
Yeah.
And he did feel like a scary vampire to me. Mm. But you're right that it never felt like he's seducing these people.
Yeah.
It was just kind of like we're being told, and they are being drained. And you're like, okay.
I didn't think he was bad at all. I thought he was quite good. But it seemed like an interesting choice for Dracula, which is such a big character.
Yeah.
I'll
tell you who I loved.
Who?
Dolly Wells as Sister Agatha.
Yes.
She was the best part of this.
She is the best part of this.
She's so good.
She's so funny.
Yeah.
She's like, and this isn't a comedy, but she's bringing comedy into her delivery of all of her lines. I know she's in a bunch of things in England, but do you remember that episode of the IT Crowd when Roy went out with the girl who had, like, facial reconstruction surgery, and so her face was all bandaged?
Oh, is it her?
Yeah, that was Dolly Wells. Yeah, you can't even see her.
Yeah, no, not at all.
And then he didn't want to commit to going on a date with her until he saw her face, which is so rude.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was her. And then there were a bunch of people that I've never seen before.
They're kind of one-offs,
Jonathan Aris, he's from, Sherlock.
Yeah.
But other than him, there were a lot of people, that I hadn't really been familiar with.
And then Mark Gatiss.
He was great.
Yeah.
As always.
And randomly, Curtis from Misfits was in it briefly.
Nathan Stewart Jarrett.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was interesting.
Yeah, that was interesting. I think, I mean, mentioning Mark Gatiss, I think we have to mention that this is created by Mark Gatiss and Stephen Moffat.
Yes.
And it feels very much like a show created by them.
That's what everyone's saying.
I think if you like them, you'll probably like this.
Yeah.
And vice versa. If you don't, this may not be your favorite thing.
Yeah.
Because I can also tell, I love Mark Gatiss to death.
Yeah.
I think he's phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think he tends to write and create things so that he can put a role for himself in it somewhere.
Maybe. I would do the same if I were a writer, but...
when he finally showed up, I was like, okay, yep, you at least waited till the third one.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really interesting. This kind of... The weird... And this is spoilers for the show, so if you haven't seen it, watch it, but...
Yeah, but it's also Dracula.
It starts... So. The first two episodes are in Victorian England... And then it time jumps to modern England.
Yes.
Which is really interesting, because then Lucy, the character of Lucy is in the future, as well as the Renfield character, played by Mark Gatiss. So, yeah, it was
and
really...
And a Jonathan Harker, but they didn't
the Jonathan Harker Foundation.
But then also, wasn't the kid related to him in some way?
I don't think so.
Oh, I think I got that wrong.
I don't think so. Yeah, it was very, very weird. And I think by the end of it, I just kind of was like, what was this about?
I think that's the thing that I had the trouble with, too, where I'm like, why did you create this now?
Yeah.
and what were you trying to say?
Yeah.
Because they also, like, I mean, we're talking down on it a little, but, like, the first two episodes are very good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I really enjoyed the retelling of the first one.
The
like,
first
it is,
episode's great.
And it's this weird mystery where you're just, like, you're realizing in real time, along with Jonathan Harker, like, oh, no, you're dying. And then you realize, oh, you've been dead. And I think that's a good moment.
Yeah. They did a really good job with his makeup. I thought the makeup on him was amazing. And they also had to do it in stages, you know? Because, like, he arrives at Dracula's house and he's just, like, you know, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. And then he just slowly goes, like, more and more weak. And he starts losing his hair. And he's getting tired. And he's losing his color. Yeah, so they had to do all these various stages of his decay. And I thought they did a very good job. And the guy who played Jonathan Harker, John Heffernan, I just looked it up. He was very good.
Yeah, I thought he was great. He was one of my favorite parts of the first episode, too.
He's cute.
Very good. And then it's upsetting to find out he's been dead and telling you this story.
Yeah.
But I like that twist that it's in this, that they touched on, like, death isn't death for a lot of things, a lot of creatures, especially around Dracula. He has the power to keep things alive.
Yeah.
To create these weird zombified things.
That was one thing that they kind of just, like, mentioned, and then you were supposed to go along with it, was that he would drain people, they would die, and then some of them would kind of come back alive. They would be undead, but not all of them. Some people would just die.
Right, because it was something along the lines of, like, people that are ready to pass on and people that aren't.
Yeah.
Something like that. But they...
Strange.
They could have gone more into detail on that.
It's really weird.
I felt like they could have gone more into detail of a lot of these things.
Yeah.
Like, I think it being a three-part miniseries was a good thing, but also we could have used, like, three more episodes.
Yeah.
I think we could have used a lot more to, like, really flesh out what mythology are you trying to do? What are you trying to say?
Yeah.
Because then at the end of the day, they wanted the really big moment at the end. What we've been waiting the three episodes, these three movie-length episodes to find out.
Yeah.
Why is he afraid of the cross? Why is he afraid of the sun? And it turns out...
He can go in the sun. He just didn't know it.
And I don't understand that.
Me neither.
Whatsoever. I get the idea that they're saying, hey, myths change over time.
Yeah.
The things that we believe and we tell people about these things change over time.
Yeah.
I don't understand how a great mythical creature can just forget or make up that he thinks that the sun can kill him.
It sounded like he... couldn't die. He couldn't be killed. You could stab him, you could drown, like, he will not die. And it sounded like after so many years, he wanted to. And his desire to die was so great that he kind of, like, concocted this idea of, like, the sun will kill me, I can't go in it, because he had to subconsciously
give himself an enemy.
Yeah, I don't know. It was very, very weird. But then he could die if he drank the blood of somebody with cancer.
And that was another weird thing.
It was strange. Where it's like,
is it blood cancer that she has? Like, what?
Why is that a thing?
Is that a thing? Did nobody throughout history had cancer until the modern period?
Yeah.
Like, I was really hoping whenever he first bit into her and started, like, spitting out the blood, I thought, oh, okay, they've been planning for this. They built this big foundation.
She's dosed herself with something that will make his blood...
Like a sedative, a garlic.
Make her blood repel him.
Yeah, like poison to him.
Nope.
It happened cancer. To be lucky. Like, so if she wouldn't have had cancer, she would have died there.
It's true. Yeah, for sure.
What?
I don't know.
That episode is a lot.
I know we're critiquing it, but there were some things I did really like in it.
Yeah.
And one was I liked the mystery of him always saying to Agatha, like, I am scared of the cross, but not for the reason you think.
Yeah.
I liked that mystery being built up.
Kept us watching.
Because you were like, what is it? Like, what could it be? So I really liked that. I also really liked his relationship with the sun. he always called her, he always called it a her.
Yeah.
And always, like, longed to see the sun, but he never could, and he would dream about looking at the sun, and before
he made Jonathan Harker
before he killed Jonathan, yeah, he was like, look at her and, like, describe her to me, and I kind of really liked that.
I love that idea.
That was cool, and it was kind of, like, weirdly romantic.
And that's why I think it was a bit of a letdown that he invented for himself, where I'm like, but he loves the sun. Like, it didn't feel like he feared the sun or hated the sun.
Yeah.
It felt like he loved it. And I'm with you. Like, I really like that idea.
Yeah.
The thing I like the most about all of this is the production design. Like, the way every set looked was gorgeous. Loved his mansion where it was, like, a maze and you couldn't find your way through.
The scene where Jonathan is trying to find his way, he's basically trying to find where the weird girl came out and, like, wrote on his window, which was cool.
Yeah, that was
she
neat.
Wrote on his window from the outside.
But then that didn't have much to do with anything.
Yeah, the scene of Jonathan kind of, like, going all through the castle trying to find his way and then finding the map in the back of the portrait and stuff.
Yeah,
like,
that was cool.
That was so good.
Yeah.
I think that the first episode of this is very strong.
It's the best of the
three. And then the second episode is really cool in its own way.
It's good, and then...
And then the third episode, it just... takes the whole thing that you just got into and then kind of derails it and changes it.
Because it makes you think, too, like, the second one, it is a bit of a shock and a bummer that, like, the whole finale, the last, like, 20 minutes are all to set up the final episode.
Mm-hmm.
They're all, like, him, the, like, ship has to go down so he can be at the bottom of the ocean so that they can find him and revive him in the future. And then... there's no payoff for it.
It's
just like,
of...
and now he's like messing around with modern times. What do you think? And it's like, well, why did he have to wait? Why couldn't he have just lived all that time?
It also seemed like why wouldn't they, if they wanted to tell the story of Dracula in modern England, why wouldn't they have him land there at the beginning of the first episode? Or at the end of the first episode.
Yeah.
You know, like, why not tell more of him in... Or, if you're trying to tell his, like, history, why not make it all history? It kind of seemed like they had wanted this to be a full season.
Yeah.
Of, like, 8 or 9 episodes.
And
then they only got 3.
Yeah, that's what it kind of feels like, where I think I would have loved... Like you were saying, it just feels like a big jump to go from... Basically, the first 2 episodes take place over the course of a few weeks or months.
Yeah.
And then you jump... 130 years later.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of, like, it would have been interesting to see one that takes place right here, Victorian.
Yeah.
Give us one that takes place, like, in one of the world wars or in, like, the 60s. Like, what is Beatlemania look like for Dracula?
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a lot of other stuff in history. It's like, if you want to show Dracula through history, I'm down for that.
Yeah.
Like, putting mythical creatures in modern times... does nothing for me usually. Because I'm like, because I know they're not out there right now. And so
interesting.
And so I think it's a little more believable as a viewer where you're like, I didn't live in this time. I don't know. Like, that could have been how it is. Or, like, if you're going to show his whole history,
well, I think
make it his history.
Vampires just make so much sense in historical time periods.
You
know, like, every vampire story we've ever seen has talked about the early vampires or, like, throughout time because they live so long, like Interview with a Vampire, Twilight, you know, like everything always discusses their journey through history.
And but how much it could be like a shackle too, like what's the one that I always forget with Tom Hiddleston?
Oldest Lovers Left Alive.
Yeah,
I love that movie. That's a very, very good vampire movie.
That may be the best vampire movie.
I don't know if I would say the best.
Let the Right One In.
Because it's such an interesting take, but I think it is a very cool, necessary take.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, they're living forever, but look at how tired they are.
Yeah, how exhausting it would be once you know how to play every instrument and know every language.
That's a great movie.
I think one thing I really... loved about the modern one. I will do praises about all 3 of them, but in the modern episode, I really like the idea of the Jonathan Harker Foundation, that they've been prepping for this, and if he shows up, they want to talk to him, they'll keep him alive humanely.
They have a special cell.
A special cell and everything.
Yeah.
I loved all of that, the idea that they have people set up to be donors, because they understand, we don't want you going around eating people.
I have to keep them alive.
And then all of that was thrown out the window for, like, a joke.
Yeah.
Where it's like, you gave him the Wi-Fi password.
So I did, I hated that he got out of that facility, because I also liked that idea of them studying him in that facility.
Yeah, that was a much more interesting concept.
So I was sad when they were getting rid of that plot line, but I did think it was hilarious that he guessed the Wi-Fi password because it was his name.
Yeah.
Because he is, it's just so
he's
perfect.
He's vain enough to try.
He's vain enough to be like, oh, it's probably my name.
Yeah.
I laughed so hard at that. It was so good.
But then I could not believe these people that have been setting up this foundation for like over 100 years, the second they get him.
Yeah.
They don't even bother trying to keep him there.
No.
Like, the second the lawyer comes in, is like, well, you gotta let him go, because...
Rights.
You gotta.
Yeah.
And then they're like, well, I guess you're right. And he's like, has he attacked anyone?
No.
And the woman who is literally missing a thumb because Dracula bit it off goes, nope. And it's... I'm just like, what?
So yeah, that was really weird.
Stop Renfield. Like, throw him in the cage, too. I don't know. Like, why...
Yeah, it seem like, for a foundation that was there to catch Dracula, keep him, study him, they just gave
him up. They're very bad at their jobs. And we didn't find out who was bankrolling them, did we?
They mentioned it. I think we missed it. We were talking, but it sounded like Dracula, back in the day, the firm that the lawyer worked for, Dracula employed them back when he was living in his castle or whatever. So he had already paid money to
them. Oh, no, I don't mean him. I mean, who is bankrolling the foundation?
Oh.
Because they made it sound like they were mercenaries, which means a lot of money was coming in for them.
Interesting. I don't know.
And, yeah, I think there was... That's the main problem with this miniseries, is there's so much interesting stuff that they don't let it have enough time.
I agree with that.
This isn't a bad miniseries by any means. Like, I know we're talking down on some things, but like...
It's just too fast.
It's too fast and too heavy.
Yeah.
But it's very gory and very bloody. If you like some good vampire deaths, this is for you.
There's a lot of eating, though. There is an undead baby.
Yeah, hated that.
When that undead baby started to crawl out of the box, I remember, like, I turned around to look at you, and you were looking at the TV, and I've never seen your face look the way that it looked.
I was horrified.
I
was viscerally affected by
that. I've never seen that expression on your face. It was indescribable, and it was kind of amazing.
I mean, they do a really good job with the horror.
Yeah.
I think. Like,
in the first episode, especially.
It is spooky as hell, and I think in the second one, I really,
it was
really very
good.
Scared in the second episode.
I liked the slow burn of, everyone going missing one by one on the ship.
Yeah.
And they're starting to point fingers, and then he's just like, oh, who could it be? It was really good.
He's like wiping blood off of his lips, basically.
Speaking of snacks.
Oh.
Would you like to take a snack break?
Only if it's not blood.
I can't promise that it's not. But here.
Is blood a British delicacy?
Come with me to my castle.
It's not blood pudding.
Snack break. This is the portion of the podcast where Sheldon and I try a British snack. Today, I've got something that we've been holding on to for a while, and we haven't tried it.
Yeah, I'm surprised.
Well, we've had so much candy on our hands, so much British candy, and this was kind of just one of the last things that we decided to try, but this is called Dolly Mix.
Dolly Mix.
So I looked it up on Wikipedia. It says, Dolly Mixture is a British confection consisting of a variety of multicolored fondant shapes, such as cubes and cylinders with subtle flavorings. The mixture consists of small, soft sweets and sugar-coated jellies.
Yeah, and it looks like here there are 9 different kind of flavors, at least in the Dolly Mix that we have. I don't know if maybe there are other varieties, but in the cylinders we have yellow, pink, and brown, which I would imagine might be a chocolate, a strawberry.
Yeah.
What's yellow flavor? And then the flat ones, we've got a green and white, a pink and white, and then a yellow and white. And these remind me, this is exactly what I imagine Fred and George created in Hogwarts.
Oh, little candies, little colorful candies.
And then we have a green, a red, and a purple gumdrop.
So, it kind of seems like a fruit-ish kind of version of licorice all sorts.
Ooh, which I
because it's got the little round pieces. Yeah, I it's got the those. Little square pieces, and then it's got little gumdrop.
Yeah, yeah, it is a lot like that.
So Dolly Mix, I heard of it. The only reason I know about it is because back in the day when YouTube first started in like 2005, 2006. There was a British vlogger that I followed who I ended up being friends with. We would talk to each other, messages and stuff.
Yeah.
I think his name was Wiseman3. And he was just this British kid who was making fun videos about, like, his life in England. And I loved his videos, but I remember distinctly one of his videos was, he lived in a flat with, like, a couple other guys. And I guess he went into the bathroom one day, and there was a bag of Dolly Mix in the bathroom.
Oh, no.
And for some reason, it irked him so much that he made a whole video ranting. And I just remember...
Don't put food in the bathroom.
He talked for 5 minutes straight about how disgusting it was that someone was eating Dolly Mix in the bathroom, and he was like, blah, 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 blah. He ranted for 5 minutes, and at the very end of the video, he just, like, pauses, and then he goes... Dolly Mix in the bathroom. And I just loved it.
That's pretty great.
And so that's how I knew what Dolly Mix was, and I've always wanted to try it, so now we have it.
Now we've got some.
Would you like to try it?
Yeah, I've got a pink cylinder.
I have a purple cylinder. Let's eat it.
Mmm. That was much more chewy than I would imagine. I thought it was going to have more, like, a firmer texture.
Mmm. Like a gummy?
Yeah. Or no, not like a gummy. But, like, the outside feels firm, but when you bite, it's, like, I mean, it's fondant. Like
it's definitely fondant. I hope you like fondant.
Yeah.
I kind of like that it kind of dissolves in your mouth.
Yeah, very quickly.
Turns to sugar. Now I'm eating a square. Ooh.
Oh, I like the squares.
The pink square is really good.
So is the yellow.
Mmm.
What does this remind me of? Like, the flavor is a flavor I've had before.
I don't know.
Like, it's similar to an American candy flavor.
Let's try a gumdrop.
Okay, I'm coming back to that square, though.
This purple gumdrop.
I'm gonna try a green one.
I like the gumdrop.
Oh, yeah, same. This is tangy.
It reminds me of the gummies in, the gumdrops in, Pick and Mix.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, this is similar, like, Americans don't have a lot of candy like this. It's a mixture of candy.
We should. This is.
We should have more.
This is pretty, like, good.
Instead, we have it when people do it with chips, like, and I don't enjoy that as much.
Like Chex Mix?
Like, yeah, Chex Mix and stuff. Yeah. Like, ew. Or, like, I think I'm, like, the only person that doesn't like Ghirardettos.
Ghirardettos?
Yeah.
Ooh, those are so good.
I don't like it.
This is interesting.
I'm gonna try another square. I like these squares.
At first taste, I was kind of like, this is dumb. But I actually really like it.
Oh my god, I realized what the flavor I'm tasting is in the square.
What?
It tastes exactly like Valentine's Day hearts.
Ooh. Those, like, little sweet hearts?
Yep. The ones that's like a tiny bit chalky.
They're chalky, yeah. Yeah, it is kind of like that because it's sweet, but it's not super flavorful.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's really good, though. I
kind of like them. They're kind of one of those that you're not really there for the flavor. You're there for the fun shapes.
And for the texture.
And you're just eating sugar, which is fun.
Yeah. And
it's fun to eat sugar. It is!
I know. I would like your thesis statement on how fun it is to eat sugar.
It's fun to eat sugar.
I know.
Even if it's not good, you're like, your brain is like, I love it.
It is an interesting idea, though, to put two different fondants together with one, like, gummy thing. Like, as much as I like all the flavors, yeah. I don't know if that goes together. Like, I feel like you should have three separate things, or three of the same thing with different shapes. Like, isn't it a bit odd?
You're saying the gummy is a little random?
Yeah, the gummy stands out.
Mm. Speaking of randoms.
It does also remind me of randoms.
Yeah, randoms were good.
Man, we had so many great little things like
this. The orange one's very good.
These ones? Of the flats?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The orange one, I definitely taste the sweet.
Yeah. The Valentine's hearts.
Wow, this is a surprising candy. I think I waited really long on these because I didn't think they were going to be good, but they're
great.
They're pretty good.
Yeah, we're going to have to stop ourselves from snacking on these throughout the rest of the episode.
I will post a picture of the Dolly Mix on our social media.
Yeah, and let us know if it is like a thing with some of these other mixed bags like we've had before, if there are multiple flavors, like if there are multiple different kinds, or is this like the only, is this the go-to, there are flats, there are cylinders and their gummies.
I mean, we could also Google it and look at it, pictures of Dolly Mix.
I would rather have somebody tell me.
Well, that was tasty. Are you ready to head back into our episode?
Let's fly back like a bundle of bats.
And we're back.
We poofed into existence like bats.
So we have, we've criticized this show quite a bit. We could spend just a little bit of time talking about our favorite things about it.
Yeah.
So I definitely, like I said before, I really liked his relationship with the son. I thought that was cool. I haven't seen that in a vampire movie before. Sometimes they're like, I miss it. But they didn't have this, like, built up kind of romance with the son. I really liked that he would kind of gain the memories and skills.
That was interesting.
Of the people whose blood he drank.
Yeah, and it explains how he can, like, speak so many languages.
It's an interesting... Yeah, because when he first meets Jonathan Harker, he's older looking, but he's speaking this, like, really rough Transylvanian accent. Yeah.
And then
the more
better.
He drinks from Jonathan, which you don't see. You don't know what's Never. Happening. Neither does Jonathan. He starts to get more and more British and younger looking. And that was really cool.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and I like that he can kind of get their memories and, like, live inside their head if he drinks their blood. That was a really cool concept that you don't often see.
Also from the first episode, I love the reveal that Sister Agatha is a Van Helsing.
Yep.
That was top notch.
That
it
was so really
great.
Cool because
good moment.
When she comes in, you're like, oh, you're a funny nun. Like, who are you?
And, like, you know a lot.
And then just, like, after her being in the scene for a little while, you're like, you're interesting.
Yeah, it's like,
and
what do you
then,
know?
Like, midway through the episode, I remember you going, who is she?
Yeah.
Because you were just like, why is she so knowledgeable?
Yeah, about this thing that other nuns probably aren't. And, like, you can
most people didn't know much about vampires at the time, so.
And she kind of knew all of the, at least the things that throughout what she had been told.
That was a very good reveal.
That was cool.
That she was kind of the Van Helsing. I think that it would have been very easy for them to have written this role for a man, kind of a Van Helsing character. I thought it was really cool that it was a woman. What else did you like?
I liked her next episode, the reveal that she was also being Jonathan Harker in the same way. Yeah. That, like, also had no idea. And I don't know why I didn't see that coming.
That was so cool when they're sitting there playing chess and you're like, how do they get here?
Yeah.
Where are they? They're just talking. I guess they're hanging out like friends. And then I loved when he kept talking about, like, visiting whoever was in cabin 9. And she was like, who's in cabin 9?
And other people were curious, too.
And the moment, and what I think it's one of the coolest parts of the show, actually, is when she realizes she's the person in cabin 9.
Yeah.
And you just see the area of Dracula's castle that they're standing in. It suddenly does an aerial shot and,
like,
zooms out.
Very overhead, yeah.
And you see that the staircase around them makes a giant 9.
Yeah,
that was
a beautiful
visual. Very cool. Yeah, I think the visuals in this show are very good. As you said before, all the sets look incredible.
Yeah.
And then when Dracula goes to the future and gets that cool apartment,
his apartment was so cool. That was so cool.
It was amazing. So that was really cool.
Also, I really loved the idea of his prison cell. Like this cell that they could turn and basically corner him with the sun.
Yeah.
And that was brilliant.
It just kind of rotates, and then the sun comes in, and, like, he has to back into the corner.
Like, it wasn't, like, out of... As much as I love, like, the Blade franchise, there are some times in there where you really have to suspend your disbelief to be like, okay, I guess that's how the sun works.
Yeah.
But in this, you're like, oh, yeah, I get it. It's a giant mirror, and that's, like, the shadow it's casting on the floor.
Yeah. Very cool.
Cool concept. Wish we could have seen more of it.
I liked when he was looking at the guard and he was like, why have you put a toilet in here?
Yeah.
He was like, I'm a vampire. Hello. He was really good.
I loved him describing how great that woman's terrible apartment was.
Yes.
Just as somebody, like, in an empty castle, like, they were in a time where you didn't fill buildings with stuff the way that we're just pack rats
now. Or, like, you'd have to be very rich to have that many objects in your house.
Yeah. Things that you could just keep and not have to sell.
So him just looking around her house and he was like, this room is amazing. And she's like, this place is a dump. And he was like, no. what did he say? Like, I've met kings and queens, and I've met all kinds of amazing people throughout time, but you wouldn't be able to get a single one of them out of this room. Like, yeah. I thought that was cool, because very often when you see a person from the past transported to the future, they're like, what's this? I don't know. What's that? What's a car? What's a toaster? So I thought it was really cool that, well, like...
he did do some of that, too, though.
It's true, but, like, I thought it was cool that he, like... he knew what a camera was because it was a thing that someone would hold that you'd point at things. And so he saw the modern version of that.
Yeah.
You know, he was able to perceive what it was. So I thought that was really cool.
Yeah. I wasn't super into that. But then now that I'm thinking about it, he also drank some of the blood and, like, revived himself on the blood of the other, like, diver that works for that place. So I'm sure he got a lot of, like... yeah, wait, why didn't he get more modern memories from her and understand more of modern society if he drank her blood?
I don't know.
I don't understand how he works after this, like, these three movies. Why is...
they're kind of definitely taking liberties with vampire lore.
Yeah.
Introducing some cool new ideas, but they're definitely, it seemed like maybe there were some inconsistencies to the way that he operated.
And then maybe one of the worst character ideas in history of film... Bloofer Lady.
Yeah, that was very strange.
Like, I don't understand what any of that was about.
There was a little child who was undead. He came back from the dead.
Where did this child come from?
He said sometimes the little ones can wriggle their way to the surface, which doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't.
If they're in a coffin.
Well, and also, even if they were out of the coffin, like... dirt is heavy.
Yeah.
And if you're 6 feet under it, like...
and you're a little kid?
Like, even Kill Bill.
Yeah.
She was trained by ninjas.
It was weird.
Out.
There was a little undead child that kept calling her Bloofer Lady, because that's how he says beautiful lady.
Which I hate.
I definitely thought that they were trying to introduce a new, Are You My Mummy?
Yeah.
From Doctor
kind
Who.
Of a thing.
With that creepy little child. But it didn't have any of... that.
No.
It didn't have the charm of that or the creepiness of it. It just, like...
it's also, we didn't care about that character.
It seemed kind of lame.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I didn't care about Lucy.
Yeah, she was like,
pretty.
Awful.
She was really pretty.
And that was her only quality.
That was as far as her character.
She's
and then,
a very pretty woman who everyone says is ordinary.
Well...
I don't get why everyone describes her as ordinary if she describes herself as, I'm incredibly beautiful, everyone smiles at me, nobody, like, anyone would do anything for me.
Yeah,
I don't get why other people describe her as ordinary.
I don't think people did. I think just the guy that she liked.
But even Van Helsing was like, well, there's got to be a reason why he would come after her.
Yeah, I don't
like,
know.
Even she was confused. I don't know.
It was strange. I think the low part of the show...
is the third episode.
...is when Lucy comes back from the dead, being all burned. Like, I just didn't care.
And then was she a vampire?
No, she was, like, undead.
But she, like, bit that security guard's neck.
I don't know.
But then, obviously, it didn't heal her. But does Dracula heal himself in this version?
I don't know.
We never saw.
It was very strange. And then it just kind of ended. And you were
okay. Honestly, the first episode's great. If you are interested in this at all,
yeah,
but don't want to, like, watch three episodes of something, just watch the first one. I think it's great on its own. It's standalone.
Yeah.
And it's not really leading to anything.
Yeah.
So, like, honestly, watch the first one. It's fine.
I would say the first and second episode are great. And then...
I think the first one's great and it gets worse from there.
At the end of the second episode, when he walks up on shore and it's modern times, if you're not interested, just don't watch.
Yeah.
I mean,
just don't watch the third one.
So... how British is it?
Not very. especially because the lead isn't British.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I didn't realize that Van Helsing was British. Like, in my mind, her accent seems, like, not British.
Well, like, her ancestor, Agatha Van Helsing, was kind of... I don't know if she was Transylvanian or what. But
yeah, but she had...
she kind of had that, like, Eastern European...
and I guess that got me
thinking.
...thing
going on. I think... I mean, Bram Stoker was, what, Irish?
Oh, I have no clue.
He was Irish, I believe. And so he kind of concocted this tale. I mean, it came out of Transylvania, but I think Dracula was kind of a popular archetype in England and in Europe.
Gotcha.
But, I don't know that this is, apart from taking place mostly in England, I don't know that this is that British.
Yeah.
Are you...
I have some trivia for this, if you'd be interested.
Sure.
they're, like I said, I think this is very self-referential, and I kind of was thinking a couple of these things and had to look it up, and people online are confirming a lot of the same stuff. So all of the exterior shots of Castle Dracula are filmed at Orava Castle.
Where's that?
Which is on a high rock above the Orava River in Slovakia.
Ooh!
It's the exact same castle from Nosferatu.
Wow!
And as I was watching it, like, that's one of my favorite vampire movies. I love Nosferatu.
I love Nosferatu.
And whenever I was watching, I was like, it seems very familiar, but I couldn't place it.
That's actually very cool that they filmed there.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
And then also, the design of Dracula, of course, is evolving over the course of each of these, like, chapters. And each of them are kind of paying homage to previous incarnations of the vampire. So the very first, like, the kind of decaying, elderly Count Dracula, like you mentioned before, is a lot like Gary Oldman's Dracula from Francis Ford Coppola's Bram Stoker's Dracula,
which
that was just a mouthful to say. But then also, his long coat and cape that he wears with a wide resting tunic is inspired by the Sir Christopher Lee's The Horror of Dracula.
Ah, that's cool.
And then his dinner attire aboard the Demeter is Bela Lugosi, basically, complete with the red amulet.
And the long cape.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah, and I mean, there's some other stuff. There's a lot of nods to, like, Moffat put and Mark Gatiss were putting a lot of nods to things in there. Like, Sister Agatha at one point referred to her friend detective in London, which kind of immediately makes you
Sherlock.
Think Sherlock Holmes.
Wow.
And
that's kind of annoying.
She appears in a real Sherlock Holmes. Not the one that they created, but in something else. So it's kind of a nod for both of them. But yeah, there are a couple of other moments like that where they're really trying to kind of pay tribute to stuff that they've done, which is interesting. But yeah, I think overall, I think they really wanted to make a cool Dracula series that fits in with the greats.
Yeah.
Do you think they succeeded? Is this one that you will kind of like hold up against those other... I don't think any Dracula movie's perfect. I think all the tales we've been given are good.
I think this was really fun to watch, but I don't know if this version of Dracula is, like, one of the best that I've seen.
Yeah.
I think interesting.
Some interesting ideas. I like that they went for it with a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
I just wish we had more time in this world, or if they would have really honed in on a couple of the ideas.
Honestly, by the end, it just made me miss Penny Dreadful.
So much so that you immediately watched one of the Penny Dreadful episodes.
We're gonna have to do Penny Dreadful.
Okay.
It's so good. It's so good. And it's gothic horror.
Yeah,
and Dracula's,
that's your favorite.
I would rate the Dracula and Penny Dreadful as being one of the best Draculas that I've ever seen.
Better than Gary Oldman. Okay,
He's seductive. And sweet.
My, you're blushing.
Anyway, are you ready to guess your British word?
Oh, I am so ready.
Okay. So I'm having trouble finding British words and phrases that we haven't done.
I don't already know.
Ones that are easy that I know you know, or ones that aren't just completely guessable.
Yeah.
From what it is. So I found...
Is there a British Urban Dictionary?
I don't think there is. But I'll look. this word is something that I happened to find today. I was rushing. I was really trying to find a word just real quick. I found this. It's one of my favorite things.
Whoa. Okay.
I love it. So...
All right. So I'm going to think of it in that sense. All right.
The word is bodge. B-O-D-G-E. Bodge. What do you think bodge means?
Okay. I mean, my initial thought, bodge reminds me of, like, stodgy, which is, like, big and thick and dense.
Okay.
So if you're bodging something, I think you're just, like, barreling through. You're, like, clumsily just, like, not caring for the things around you and just knocking stuff over. Like, oh, what a bodge. Just, like...
Like a bull in a china shop.
Not necessarily, like, doing it furiously,
okay,
but just, like, such a clumsy person. It's, like, sharp elbows hitting everything. Yeah, like, somebody who is clumsy and I think probably big, like a small person probably can't be a bodge. I think if you bodge something up, it's a big noticeable thing. I think it's kind of like one of those situations where like Mickey Mouse and Fantasia with all the brooms in the yes. water. Mickey botched that up. Mm. Yeah. That's what I think it is.
Interesting. Okay. Okay, well, the definition is kind of a really long.
Okay.
Because, and this is why I love this word so much, is because it's not just a word with a meaning. It is a full-on thing that is a very British thing. Okay. So I'm going to read you, this is from Babel Magazine. This is about Bodge. Most Brits are mortified by the thought of hiring an expensive expert to mend an item in need of repair. And we take pride in giving the repair job a go ourselves. But what if this repair job is of low quality and doesn't really get the job done?
Oh, no.
That's what we call to bodge something. This verb perfectly describes the clumsy and invariable futile attempt to mend a broken item. For example, if the tape has come off on the handlebars of your bike, don't go to a professional bike repair shop and pay through the nose for the application of expensive bike tape by a man who knows what he's doing. Perish the thought. Instead, grab some cheap sellotape from the newsagents and affix it to your handlebars yourself. Who cares if the end bits continue to up in the wind. You've just perfected the British art of bodging it, and that's far more important right now.
Okay.
So bodging it is specifically kind of like DIY fix it yourself.
Yeah.
But it's not really great.
Yeah. I'm just gonna eat some more, what are these again?
Dolly mix.
Dolly mix.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought that was a really fun word. So yeah. good guess.
Bodge.
Good guess, Sheldon.
We could just bodge it ourselves.
All right, everyone, thank you for listening to our Dracula episode. If you're interested in watching Dracula and you haven't, please go ahead and do it. You may like it a little bit better than we did.
You might.
But it was fun. It was really fun.
Yeah, it is a fun watch. I mean, especially the first two are great.
If you are interested in sending us an email, you can at anglefilespodcast@gmail.com. That's files with an F. We're also on Facebook and Instagram and Anglefiles Podcast.
Yeah, on our Facebook, we like to share a lot of like British articles and stuff that we find and
memes.
And some memes. And on Instagram, we're always sharing the candy that we tried this episode. So I think check both of those out for different reasons.
Yay! Thank you, everyone, for joining us. Keep calm. And remember, don't name your Wi-Fi password after Dracula, who you're keeping locked up.